0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, and Joe at RT.ie. Brendan VC has contacted us. Brendan, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You're walking the Camino. Why? The Camino de Santiago. We'll explain more of it in a moment. Why are you doing it, Brendan?
I'm doing it in memory of my brother, Liam, who passed away to suicide in January, and I'm trying to raise funds for Southside Cabin.
Okay, and just your line is... I'll try and get a better line just because it's such an important issue. Right. Stay with us, Brendan. Peter O'Brien. Peter, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
You've done the Santi, the Camino.
I've done the Camino twice with a group of young people. We cycled from the parish of Glastool here in South County Dublin.
Okay.
39 years ago to Santiago de Compostela was our first time.
Wow. Because it's regarded, it is a pilgrim's way. It is regarded as one of the three great pilgrimages of Christendom, along with Jerusalem and the Via Francigena, which is in Rome.
We had actually cycled to Rome in 1980 with a larger group of cyclists then. And I think we just got bitten by the bug here in our parish. A lot of sisters and brothers of people who went to Rome wanted to come along to Santiago de Compostela as well.
And tell us about the route. And is it a pilgrimage? Is it very spiritual?
I suppose we had a group of young people who, I don't know how much religion meant to them, but okay. I think the thought of following in a pre-Reformation pilgrimage route, mm-hmm. Was something that was different. It was, you know, we'd have a parish, pilgrimage to Lourdes every year and one maybe to Ladies Island. So we just came up with something that would physically challenge young people. And I think we were right because it left great memories with them for the rest of their lives. Now they're spread all over the world. They have their own families. But it was a fantastic challenge and a big logistical challenge as well because a lot of them were doing their leaving cert.
Okay.
And they were training at 6 o'clock in the morning until about 8 o'clock before they went to school. And then they'd have to do Sunday training. We do about 100 miles or 120 miles. And then they all had to complete the Wicklow 200, if you've ever heard of it. It's fairly tough endurance cycle held every June. So they were well prepared, and they were a fantastic group of young people.
And the Santiago, the Camino, began apparently when the remains, the relics of St. James the Great were discovered nearby in the 9th century. And it's been recognised by the EU. They declared it the fourth cultural route of the Council of Europe. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's incredible. Where does it begin?
Well, the association here is St. James's Gate in Dublin.
Yeah.
And associated with Guinness's, I suppose, as well. We began it in the car park in Glastool. When we reached the cathedral in Santiago, I'll never forget it because we walked the bikes into the square there. And the first thing that hit us was these guys on a set of pipes playing She Bug, She Moor. And we thought,
okay,
there's Celtic connections for you. But they were surprised when we knocked at the parish office door there in Santiago and said, is there any chance of a certificate? And they were taken aback because they hadn't to that time received any or many Irish pilgrims. They didn't, in fact, believe us. So we had to bring them outside and show them all the bicycles that we had come this far. So it was a novel, experience at that time. But we were recreating something that I'm sure many people years gone by had completed, many Irish people. In fact, there's a great connection between Dingle and Santiago de Compostela and the nearest port outside of Santiago de La Coruña, St. James's Church you have in Dingle. So there are a lot of Celtic connections. So I suppose we were reliving some of that, but giving a sense of adventure. And yes, we visited Lourdes on the way. We had our religious, we had our religious ceremonies. We also had another unique part within that our neighbouring parish here, Church of Ireland Parish, Reverend Arthur Barrett, who's now Canon of Christ Church Cathedral, he decided to join us, and he had an interest in rally driving, so he drove one of our backup support trucks. So we were an ecumenical to Santiago.
And
well,
on bicycles, obviously, different, but how long did it take?
Well, I suppose if you take in the cycle from here to Cork to get the ferry, it's just short of 1,900 kilometres, just short of 2,000 kilometres.
Wow. And how long did it take?
I suppose we would have done that maybe three times that in training before we went there.
Of course, that's incredible.
In Ireland.
And how long did it take?
Took us 13 days to get there.
And is it dangerous at any spot?
Well, on reflection, you know, people say the miracle of Lourdes, and was there a miracle when you got to Santiago? Our miracle was that we all got there safe and sound and got back, because it was a time there was no helmets. We had, now the French, and not so much the Spanish, but certainly the French were respectful of cyclists, but we had juggernauts cycling or driving alongside us. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's driven along or cycled alongside some of the cyclists or juggernaut would understand there's a big draft comes off their wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
So we learned fairly quickly to lean out from the juggernaut, so when they go by it, it straighten you up. So there were tricks like that along the way that helped our survival.
Incredible. And everyone was safe and sound, obviously, at the end of it.
Everyone was safe. And the youngest was 14 years of age. In fact, we had to get special permission from his parents to compete in the Wicklow 200 here in Ireland, because they didn't believe a 14-year-old could do it. But he's flying jets now all over the world, so he had something in him at 14
that
stood to him.
Okay, stay with us, Peter. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 text. Brendan, VC again. Brendan, you were beginning to tell us you're going to do the Camino in honour of your late brother who died by suicide.
Yes, that's right. He died in January.
And in terms of how did you come up with the idea of doing the Camino in remembrance?
So my friend Liam, and my husband Liam, his father's actually completing his final stint of the Camino, and he was going already, and he mentioned it to us after my brother passed, and we said it would be a great way of doing it in memory of him and trying to raise funds for those sad in Cavan and try to give them something back.
And what is the organisation in Cavan?
It's called So Sad Cavan, so they help families after suicide and that.
And when was that set up?
Oh, that's set up a couple of years now.
Okay. And So Sad is an organisation specifically catering for Cavan?
No, they're all over.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just raising the money for the Cavan branch. Okay.
How many of you will go in memory of your brother?
There's three of us going, so we're meeting Liam's father over there. He's going to be going a week before us.
Okay. And have you spoken to anyone who's done it in memory of a deceased? It sounds physically tough, but will it be mentally tough for you as well? Or
yeah, it probably will, but just knowing that we're doing it for a great cause and trying to raise funds for a great cause will just get us by every kilometre.
Okay, by the way, are you in training, Brendan?
Oh, yeah, we've been doing a bit of walking around the evenings and that, and we're going to go for a few hikes beforehand, so we're going to be well prepared for it.
Greg is in Glasnevin in Dublin. Greg, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You did the Camino, but there's a resonance there with what Brendan is saying. You did it in remembrance of?
Our son, Francis. He died suddenly from sudden cardiac death in 2006.
And he was a young man, was he?
29, just got his master's degree.
Okay.
Told his girlfriend the morning he died he'd never been so happy in all his life. So,
and just,
what'd you say?
Just passed away. One of the
playing senior football on a pitch in Finglas, surrounded by all sorts of fit guys, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything really, and even I, with a club secretary for years and years and years, and I didn't know much about sudden cardiac death. But we had a call out to the house, Mary Green, and she was the one that sort of briefed us.
And he passed immediately. Is that what you're saying? Obviously, the description is...
Yeah, and they tried all sorts of things. The ambulance, they did wonderful work, but they couldn't save him.
Yeah.
They reckon we've got a gene called the Brugada gene.
Okay. So what?
Anyway,
tell us about hopefully Francis in a moment. But tell us what is the connection with doing the Camino in memory of your son?
It was organised by Mary Green. Mary Green and her husband Michael started the Cry charity.
Okay.
And it was a fundraiser, and it was to be with Mary. And so a group of us, 12 people, left Dublin for the Camino. It was the most memorable holiday adventure we have ever experienced, my wife and I.
Okay.
It was fantastic, though. I just can't believe it. We met some beautiful people on the trip ourselves. And then people on the way, Spaniards, really friends for life.
And did you...
Sorry, go, Joe.
No, Greg, sorry. But did you find that people were doing the Camino from France into Spain? Were they doing it in... many of them were other people doing it with the same intent as you were in remembrance of somebody and also trying to raise money for CRY,
You wouldn't believe the atmosphere on the trip.
Okay.
It's heavenly. That's all I can say. And the fact that, you know, when we got to Santiago and arrived together and went to the church together, it's just a lasting memory. Sadly, Michael Green, who started off Cry with Mary, died last year.
Okay.
They are just wonderful. Michael, the two teams that Francis were playing on, they played again for 10 years out wires from Belverden. And Michael used to present the trophy for 10 years to the winning team. We were very lucky because the team that won at last kept the trophy.
Yeah.
And that was there as well in Finglas.
Yeah.
It's just a remarkable trip, Joe. It's just remarkable. The people that were on it are just lifesavers. That's all I can say to you now, because we raised huge amount of funds just on that little trip alone. And now we had to get, because of our success in helping people, we had to get a new screening unit, which is now in operation just outside Dalla Hospital.
Brilliant.
We have a staff of 12, I think 13 full-time cardiologists. Their reward is just remarkable. And it's an all-Ireland free to people at risk.
And I'm looking at the website there a few minutes ago. It's an incredible website. Cardiac Risk in the Young, obviously CRY, Cry, and lots of fundraisers. And how did you fundraise, Greg?
Well, my wife is a nurse.
Okay.
And she used to work in one of the local hospitals here. And we wrote to all the doctors.
Okay.
And for years they supported us.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another, either for the women's marathon, and then they supported us for the Camino. It's just remarkable. That's all I can say to you, Joe. You know, raised.
And Greg, in looking for support, you tell the story, tragedy of your son, and the mission of CRY, of Cry. And you gave us a glimpse there. There seems to be when you start the Camino, everybody seems to be in a certain space, headspace, attitude space.
Definitely. We had the surprise of our life on the trip because we've got some Spanish. Well, look, I met a Spanish lady here years ago doing English. And she turned up with her husband in Sarria, stayed the night with us, and she did the first section of the trip.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we met another girl on the trip, a Spanish girl, Monica, and she had a prosthesis, and we became friends for life. There's no doubt about it. She came back to Ireland and stayed with us here. They're just remarkable people. I don't know. I can't get over the fact that
I tell you, Greg, you're communicating it brilliantly. I'm really getting a sense of it that there is something very different about the Camino. I've never been on it. But
we met Mary Green and her sister did it, and her brother-in-law. It was really fantastic. We had a fella from West Cork who was going in memory of his two sisters. Can you imagine? I think he raised about 40,000 on the trip itself, Anthony. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. We kept the thing going. I don't know how many people we've saved, but it's just a remarkable setup, and all thanks to the Greens and the people who work in Croy.
And I encourage people now, especially after what Greg said, to look up Croy. There's a simple way of donating if you look up. Stay with us, Greg. Natasha Morton. Natasha, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. And you did the Camino with your old fella.
I hope he's not listening.
He is. Yeah. The great Peter Morton, fantastic journalist, still working. Still see his byline.
He is. Yeah, he's in Central America at the moment. He's riding a motorbike from the bottom of Chile all the way to Alaska at the ripe age of 70.
As you do.
Yeah, but we first did the Camino when I was 16. I was in fourth year and I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about it. And my dad came home from work one day and he quite simply said, "Do you want to go on a walk in Spain with me?"
Okay.
And I said, yeah, no problem. And we did, I think we did 140 kilometers the first time. It was small. I think we were only gone for it was a long time ago now. It was something like a week. We loved it. We were hooked. We absolutely loved it. And then when I turned 18, I had just finished the Leaving Cert and I'd got on my 6-year holiday backpacking around Europe. And then I went to France with Dad and we started in Saint-Jean at the very beginning. We were walking the whole thing together. And I was 18 and Dad was 56 or something. And we were walking for like 42 days or so, just him and I.
But when your dad said to you, Natasha, "Do you want to go for a walk in Spain?" Surely you said to him, "Why are you picking that one? Or is there a reason? Or is there an event?" Or
no, I don't remember asking much questions. I think the reason that he came across the Camino was he was riding his bike through Spain with his friend Tony, and they kept seeing people walking through fields with bags on.
Okay,
and you know, Dad asked somebody in a village, you know, what are all those people walking through? And, you know, the local said, "Oh, it's the Camino de Santiago." And Dad immediately was just, you know, fascinated with it and fascinated with like the story of it, you know, the pilgrimage and St. James walking all this way and, you know, all of the, you know, the history behind it. It's really quite interesting. And all the albergues and refugios that you stay in along the way, they're often in monasteries and churches run by monks. And, you know, a lot of them are free. So the whole thing is such a beautiful sort of spiritual thing. And it's not just a walk. It's so much more than a walk. And I think, you know, the other gentleman just talking there, Greg. Yeah, he put it very well. You know, it's different. You know, the people walking it, there is something about everyone that makes them unique. You know, there's a lot of lost people that do it, a lot of damaged people, hurt. And they go on the Camino to find their way in life.
And have you done the full Camino, Natasha?
The full thing, yeah. Yeah, from the very beginning in France, over the Pyrenees and all across Spain through the desert. And we actually, when we got to Santiago de Compostela, we were so emotional and high. We didn't want to stop, so we actually went the extra little bit to the coast to Finisterre.
But it's 780 kilometres.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's amazing.
And is it arduous?
I'd say the toughest part, to be honest, is I think it's 2 days through the Spanish desert. It's like completely flat. It's called the Maiseta, and there's no shade. So, you know, if you're doing it in the summer, you'd want to be getting up at sort of 6 and get going, because if you're walking at 2 o'clock in the day across the desert there, it can be really, really unforgiving. And Jesus, my dad nearly killed me. I thought he was in front of me, but he was actually behind me, and I didn't have a phone. And I kept walking, and every hostel or albergue I got to, I went in and I said, it has a Peter Murta signed in. And they were like, no. So I kept going and I kept going. Anyway, 42 kilometers later,
wow,
I got to an albergue. This lady in the hostel, she said, your father is trying to catch up with you. He's behind you. And a couple of hours later, a very, very, very angry burnt Peter Murta turned up and he was here with me. He was trying to catch me the whole time. Anyway, that was during the stretch in the desert.
And did he panic? Did he tell you?
I don't remember seeing any panic, rage. Pure rage.
Anyone that knows Peter Murta, I don't think panic, given all he's been through and all the stories he broke on, he's in the Irish side. I don't think panic wouldn't fancy his rage, because himself and Joe Joyce, my vintage will remember the incredible book they wrote called The Boss. Okay, Natasha, stay with us and we'll be back after this break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Declan, good afternoon.
Hello there, Joe. Yeah. So I've walked it 2.5 times, right?
Okay.
At the half time, I fell down a pothole, so I had to expand the ship.
Declan, it sounds like you're walking it at the moment. Are you moving around?
I'm just standing out here in the park.
Okay.
Right. So, listening to your friend Brendan and speaking to your researcher earlier, perhaps one of the most memorable things that happened to me is we were in an albergue in the Maiseta, which is the big flat, you know, where the rain in Spain falls.
Okay.
And the chap running it made us all sit around in a circle and ask why we were walking the Camino, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I gave some nonsensical reason, but what really struck me was, I'd say that 70 to 80% of the people there had very personal reasons to walk it, like the fellow from Cavan, right?
Yeah,
and I ended up, you know, you end up teaming up with people for a couple of days because you're walking at the same speed, and you know, when you go in for a coffee, they pass you, and then you go in for a coffee and they catch up with you. But there was a chap from Austria, and he'd be off early in the morning talking to his dead wife, right?
Okay.
And he said in the early morning, this is about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, he'd feel very attached to his wife, with whom he had been very deeply in love.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
So you do get those spiritual or quasi-spiritual things from a large proportion of them. But one also has to concentrate on the physical thing, because you know, it does put a big toll on the feet.
Okay, well, tell me about the physical challenge.
Well, again, I'm nearer Peter Murta's age than his daughter's age. I'll put it that way, right?
Okay.
And the first thing is over the Pyrenees. And that's the longest walk. There's nowhere to stay unless you want to sleep in the forest with the Basque witches and goblins and all of that.
Okay.
And once you get to Roncesvalles, the first place on the Spanish side,
right,
you've been walking 8 or 9 hours. mostly up and down mountains, the Pyrenees Mountains. And the only thing you want to do, is hit the mattress and sleep, right?
Okay.
And does anyone give up?
Does anyone think that?
A lot give up for various reasons. Now, I do recall you walking up Kirkpatrick. Said afterwards, never again.
Well,
right?
What I said was...
I did Kirkpatrick myself.
Well done,
and
yeah.
I was watching fellas slip all around me.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of 9 or 10 year olds and they hadn't a bother in the world talking about Harry Potter and all the rest of us as the rest of us fell like ninepins.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When people are not prepared, you know, you've got to walk... The last time I walked, it was 21 days, the whole lot, which was crazy. It was too much.
Okay.
People who started in France, probably only 1 in 3 finish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you're walking 30 or 40 kilometres every day. And people who have not been doing that, you know, we're not talking about hillside farmers or people like that. You know, it's a broad selection of people. And so you can go at any speed you like, but you have to know what you're getting into.
Did you go on your own?
I went on my own because it clears the head and stuff like that.
And
right?
when you sat around in that circle, and everyone was asked, "Why are you doing it?" Do you remember? I know you said you came up with something nonsensical, but can you remember why you did it?
One time I raised money for a nun, a Limerick Salesian nun, a member of the Salesian Order, who works in the Italian hospital in Damascus. She does fantastic work over there, right?
Okay, yeah.
But during the COVID, what got me to do it is during the COVID lockdown, I live in Rahimi, and I've walked, during COVID, I walked every Bohreen in this entire constituency during the COVID lockdown. And I walk out to Hoth so many times. You know, I'm kind of a feature, if you like, right?
Okay,
two or 3 days, I'd walk out the Hoth and back. So to get a longer run of it, I took the Camino.
Okay.
And the reason the physical reason I do the Camino over a walk in Ireland, and some of your speakers alluded to this, is they make it easy. There's a hostel, an albergue, a village every couple of miles. You
Brilliant.
Understand?
Brilliant,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if I start in Hoth and walk towards Dunleary, there'll be places all the way. And similarly, if I go over the Wicklow Mountains and all the way down to Kerry, every couple of miles, I won't be stuck for somewhere to stay.
Okay.
Right? So every group in Spain, you know, the civil authorities, the religious authorities, the shopkeepers, the restaurants, they're all on board. And I think what somebody should have mentioned was the food. Probably I shouldn't say this, but it's great. You can go in for this meal of the day, right?
Okay, yeah.
At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you get a bottle of wine, and away you march, right? And because you're marching all day long, it works off you.
Okay.
And you're actually walking through the best wine areas of Spain.
Okay, tell us, Declan, finally about meeting the Belgian royal family.
The Belgian royal family can't be out shooting grouse all day long.
Okay.
You understand? You know, they have to be doing something else with their time.
And they were doing the Camino.
They were doing the Camino. Now, what they do and many other people do is, they walk a couple of miles of it every year, right?
Okay.
So
right.
When I bumped into them and all these burly looking chaps with bulges in strange places, they were outside Lyon. I walked along with them, and you know, I had a friend, a Jesuit priest, who was well in with the Belgian royal family, so I dropped his name into the thing. So you meet
Understood.
I mean, it's just like Chaucer. You know, you meet all kinds of characters.
Okay, Pilgrim's Progress. Okay, stay there, Declan. Tony Cleary. Tony, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Why did you do the Camino?
It was something I wanted to do for years. We came across it. We were in a motor. We have a motorhome, and we were down the south of France one time. And I saw this guy crossing the beach. Everybody else was in shorts and t-shirts and swimwear, and this guy had a rucksack and a big jacket on him and the walking pole. And I said it to somebody that evening that, you know, I was wondering why he seemed totally out of place. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, he's doing the Camino. And one thing led to another. I looked up the online, and then I got the book. I actually had the book from the Mortis book as well. I got that first of all. And then there's a great guide to the Camino by an Irish guy, John Brierley. And I saw people doing that. But my wife said then when I was 70, I'm nearly 78, when I was 70, my wife said to me that she would do the Camino with me as my birthday present. But she said, I won't do it until we start in Pamplona. And a few days later, she said to some of her kids, your dad hasn't mentioned the Camino anymore. And they said, well, if Dad said, if he's not starting in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port on the French side of the Pyrenees, he's not going at all. So the compromise was, she said she'd start with me. And so we did it 8 years ago, nearly at this stage. But we took our time. We spent 7 weeks and 2 days doing it.
And I want to get into the nitty gritty of it and the challenge, Tony.
Yeah.
So you did it for your wife's birthday, but you did it
no,
in
it was my birthday.
Oh, sorry,
it was your birthday.
Okay, you were 70. Okay.
It was her birthday present to me to come with me.
Oh, very good, very good. And did you find it challenging?
Oh yeah, I mean the first day is the worst of all, because you start in Saint Jean and you walk out under the archway and you turn a bend in the road, and I don't know if you know Patrick's Hill or not in Cork.
No, I do
but
indeed.
It's like
yeah.
Patrick's Hill only is twice as long and twice as steep, and
oh,
when you get to the top
luck.
Of that, you turn a bend and it's like Patrick's Hill again all over again, and that's the way it goes on until you get. There's only one place on that road that you can stop before Ranskavai. There's a place called Orisan, and all that is a bend in the road, and there's an albergue there. And luckily, my wife suggested that we would break the journey. We'd only travelled about 8 miles, but it took us, I'd say, about 6 hours because of the fact that you're climbing the whole time.
Okay.
But we stayed there that night and then moved on across the Pyrenees the following morning and stayed in Ranskavai the following day. And after we did it on our own, so we met up with people. We reckon we met about 70 or 80 different nationalities.
Ah.
But I wanted to do it the way the pilgrims did it. I carried my rucksack from start to finish. And you can get it sent down, all right, but if you send it on, then you see you're committed to walk as far as where the rucksack is going to be.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Whereas if you bring it with you, you can decide, look, by 11 o'clock, it's very hot. Come on, we stay here. It's a nice village or whatever, and there's a nice albergue here or whatever. But no, it was an experience of a lifetime, to be honest, which is one of the things that I will never forget.
And that attitude, that sense, that atmosphere that's on it seems to be quite incredible.
It's extraordinary. I mean, we had a great conversation one night with a Japanese couple. Now, I haven't a word of Japanese and they hadn't a word of English, but we communicated. I gave him a loan of my phone charger. His phone charger wasn't working and he handed back to me the following day. You know the way the Japanese bow very low
with two hands
up, raised up, you know. So I bowed as low as he did, and I reckon we did an awful lot for Japanese-Irish relations in that few minutes. The whole thing, you're having dinner at night in the hostels and you're having dinner with maybe 7 or 8 different nationalities. And I mean, we reckon between 60 and 80 different nationalities we met in the 7 weeks we were away.
How many?
But about 70 to 80 different nationalities. Oh, they were from everywhere.
Did you keep everywhere?
I mean, Russians, a lot of South Koreans do it. Apparently, some very well known author in South Korea did the Camino and wrote a book on it. And you'll get them there in their droves. Well, I'm going back to the year 8 years ago now. They were there, but they're very single minded about it. Their heads down. They don't stop to kind of smell the roses or take photographs. Whereas we stopped we didn't pass a coffee place or some place. If they were selling a decent bottle of wine, we walked through 3 days going through Rio. And I reckon if I took baby steps, I might be able to stretch that for another day because the wine is so good there.
And if you had wine at lunchtime when you're walking, surely you'd be dozing in the afternoon.
No, we wouldn't have it at lunchtime. We wouldn't have it.
Okay.
Okay. Now we're pushing it now. We'd make up for it in the evenings. The wine is absolutely superb.
Okay,
and
good.
Like the menu Pellegrino, the pilgrim menu, is usually about 9 to 10 euro, and it's a 3-course meal, including wine. You know, so you get the starter, which would usually be something like a pasta dish, and there were chips with everything, so you get chicken and chips or whatever. The Spanish seem to like their chips.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you get either fruit or just yogurt or something, and there's a bottle of wine for every couple. And very often, if you finish the bottle of wine, there'd be another one plunked onto the table.
No,
the wine
fantastic.
Is dirt cheap there, because half the bottles of wine wouldn't even have a label on them, you know. The quality of the wine was superb.
Okay, sounds... You're hooking people, Tony. You're hooking... Would you do it again?
I did it 4 years ago. I'm involved. I'm living in Ballincollig, where the headquarters of the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind is. And I did it just the year before COVID started. There were 18 of us went on for the fundraising, then we had to raise money to go. And we didn't stay that year, we stayed in hotels, because the first time when my wife and I did it, we did it staying in hostels. So you're in dormitories and you're kind of you're averting your eyes and hoping everybody else is doing the same thing when you're getting ready for bed or getting up in the morning. Because you're in a hostel or in a dormitory.
Are you listening to other people snoring?
And more than that, Joe. More than that, but as I say, you learn. It's part of the experience.
Okay. Well, communicate. Thank you, Tony Cleary. By the way, Natasha Morty, who's on there, has written a book, and it's called, she's written a book with her dad, Peter. It's called Buen Camino, A Father-Daughter Journey from Croagh Patrick to Santiago de Compostela. And I know I read extracts from it in the Irish Times, and it's mesmeric. It's fantastic. Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, we're talking about the Camino de Santiago de Compostela, in terms of the Irish people, the best known Christian pilgrimage walk ever. Anne Meehan. Anne, good afternoon. You've another connection. You worked in the Camino office.
Yes, I did 2 weeks voluntary work in the Camino office in Santiago, issuing the Compostelas, which are the certificates you get when you've walked more than 100K. The minimum amount you have to walk to get the certificate is 100K.
Okay, and along the way, people get their book stamped, don't they? The shell.
That's right.
Okay.
You have to have two stamps per day, and then we check them in Santiago, and you get your Compostela. People do it for religious reasons or just for their own personal reasons.
Okay, and tell us, what was the experience like for you in the office at the end of the pilgrimage?
I was in the office, and as somebody said earlier, there are a lot of people that come from Korea and Asia, Australia. They come from all over the world. I mean, there's over 5,000 certificates issued every year. And the office opens from 9 until, I think, 6. And people would start queuing outside the office at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And you were just going all day long. There was 10 people, these 10 people in the office issuing the Compostelas. And you would be working until 6 o'clock in the evening or later.
And Anne, who were you working for? I know you were volunteering. Are you working for the church, or is there an organisation that runs the pilgrimage, so to speak?
There's an organisation runs the pilgrimage. I suppose I'm not 100% certain, but I'm sure it's connected with the tourist board as well. Most of the people there were working voluntary, and there were a few core people that would be paid, I suppose, by the government or the church organisation. Not 100% certain on that.
Other people saying there's a whole ritual to the mass in the cathedral in Santiago.
That is absolutely beautiful. Yes. And they have the big urn that they swing down through the church at the 6 o'clock mass, the pilgrims' mass. And the purpose of that was to disinfect to get rid of the smell of the pilgrims, because this was going on 2 years and people were not too.
The home.
No, but did not smell too well when they arrived there. So that was the whole idea of bringing this big urn, swinging it down through the chapel.
What's the phrase they use in Ireland? There's a hum off you if you've been doing something in Jordan's that day. So that is the ritual with this famous incense urn, which swings.
Yes.
So it's massive. It has a massive swing.
Yes, there would be about 10 people lifting it up to the roof of the church, and they will be swinging it down through the church.
Incredible.
To disinfect
incredible.
Everybody.
Incredible. And how did you get involved with it initially, Anne? How did you...
Initially, how I got involved was with Multiple Sclerosis Ireland. I have MS, and they do a big fundraising thing for MS every year. So so that's how I initially got involved with it. I'm lucky that I could still walk and talk, obviously. And that I raised a couple of thousand for MS for the first walk. But I've been doing it with my two good friends every year. We've done about seven or eight of them now. And we do different parts every year.
Okay, apparently that one you talk about is known as the Boto Femerio, which means...
I couldn't think of the word.
In Spanish. Well,
neither
could I. It's been handed to me here. The Boto Femerio. And that is that means the smoke expeller. Literally.
Right.
In Galician. Okay, Anne, well done. Frank Flanagan. Frank, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
Tell us your connection with the Camino.
Yeah, so I walked the Camino, for, like a few other people that you've talked to from the Pyrenees. And along the way, I met an Irish-American who said, so the Irish have been coming on the Camino since the 13th century.
Okay.
So that intrigued me. You know, how did they get there? So we started to look into it, and we discovered that there was a book by Bernadette Cunningham called Medieval Irish Pilgrims to Santiago.
Right.
And she outlined that, like the previous caller, Dingle, Drogheda, Waterford, Galway and Dublin were points to embark for at Coruña. So people traditionally just left their homes and they walked to the nearest port and they took a boat, and they might have gone via Bristol, but they ended up in at Coruña because that was the nearest port to Santiago, and they made their way to Santiago. So that's the history of the Irish pilgrims, whereas most people would normally associate the Camino with the French Camino. So we revived the Boyne Valley Camino here, and we retraced some of the steps that people would have took to the port. And we made a journey to A Coruña, and thankfully the authorities there have revived the steps that Irish people, and they've put new signs, and we walked through the villages, and we're seeing Celtic crosses along the way. So the Gary Kelly Centre here in Drogheda would have forced me to
great,
do
great
that.
Great place, yeah.
And since that now, it's getting very popular. So it's probably, you know, it's not as long. You only have to do 25 in Ireland, and then you do the 75 from A Coruña to Santiago. Gives you the 100 kilometres that entitles you to, you know, to a Compostela. But I would say, you know, it's about 50-50 people doing it for religious reasons and other people just doing it for leisure. A nice walk, a digital detox, a way to connect. It's multicultural. The food is good. The weather is often good. And in A Coruña, they're in the region of Galicia, which is considers themselves a Celtic nation.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're among friends there.
There's
so
a connection.
It's fantastic.
A connection. And who was it told me a few minutes ago, 68 different nationalities they met when they did the Camino. I wonder how the Irish feature per capita. Are we one of the biggest?
We're about 10% a few years ago. I looked at statistics. Probably higher than that before. But there's been a huge influx of people from North America. There was a film called The Way with Martin Sheen.
Ah, brilliant.
And
I saw
that's
it, yeah.
About the Camino. So that brought the Canadians and Americans, and then I think South Korea as well. You know, so that can influence it. So, but we certainly, when it was probably gone from the Reformation up to about the 80s, and if you go back and look at the figures, probably 300 doing it a year. Now, maybe there's 10,000 or 5,000 Irish, maybe during COVID, going over and doing it. So it is huge. But everybody does it for a different reason.
And it didn't shut down during COVID. Sure, it wouldn't. Why would it?
It did for a short while. It did for a short while.
Oh, did it? Okay.
And then it reopened because, you know, there was the restrictions. But, you know, it in a way, you're out on your own all day. You know, you're in isolation, but now, I suppose the busy route of the last 100 French Way, you'd have school children from Spain, you'd have people just dropping in for the last 100.
Okay.
But starting back 800 kilometres in the Pyrenees, as one gentleman said, to make it the full 800, that would be maybe 1 in 3 might make it.
Thanks, Frank. Billy, good afternoon. You're doing the Camino for the seventh time. Does it ever get too crowded, Billy?
It doesn't, Joe, because I've gone on May, June, a couple of times in October and September, and I actually went in March last year when Dave Charlie Bird was up going up as a Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, at this time last year, yeah.
I was heading for a place called Muxia. It's the Jacobean Way north of Santiago.
Okay.
And I remember the first day I saw nobody until about 2 in the afternoon, and I overtook a young lady, and here was Emma McCauley from Derry.
Okay.
We walked together for a few hours, saw nobody else, and a young lady from Sligo met us. And that evening, we'd walked all day, Joe, and saw nobody. And okay. That evening, we were sitting outside of an albergo having a drop of liquid refreshment, and this guy plonks himself at the table and says, "How are you, lads?"
Yeah.
And it's Hugh Smith from Dublin.
Okay.
So the coincidence of meeting people, but it depends on the time of the year, Joe, when you go. Like, if you want to go in the busy May, June, July.
And is it, how do you organise to go? Where do you fly into?
Okay, well, now, I'll give you an example. I'm going out in September, and I'm flying direct to Santiago, per courtesy of Mr. O'Leary. And no one has mentioned money. Let's call a spade a shovel. Yeah. It's cost me €62 return.
Okay.
About €100 in total, Joe, for
okay,
my accommodation the first night and the flights.
That's Michael O'Leary. Okay, where do you fly into?
Santiago itself.
Oh, you're flying in, but does that mean you're walking backwards, so to speak?
I don't know. Like, you fly into Santiago, like, that is the end of the route. Now,
yeah.
For me to go to Jacobean Way was the one north. I went from Santiago northwards. Now, last October I was over there, I flew to Porto. Right.
Okay.
And I walked to Santiago. That was what they called the Portuguese Camino.
Okay. And then, do you have to book accommodation in advance?
Personally, Joe, I booked the first night. That's me now. That's my personal choice,
okay.
To be sure, because I'm arriving a bit late. But after that, I take my chances, and I've never, in the 10 years I'm walking, have had a problem, Joe.
Okay.
Never.
Okay. Oh,
but
right.
I just, there was something alluded to there earlier, and I just wanted to say something. For me, I'm doing it now 10 years, Joe, but there was a couple who got me started about 10 years ago. We went for a walk in Ballyhack, and it was for a local autism group. And
mm-hmm.
We walked around Ballyhack, if you know it, across the Passage East, Faith Leg, Cheek Point, etc. We came back and had a chat, and this couple confirmed that they were walking to Santiago. Now, I didn't even know where it was, Joe. Now, to make a long story short, they walked from Holy Cross in Tipperary
right.
to Cork, got the ferry to Roscoff, walked right through Brittany, picked up the Camino at St. Jean down near Biarritz, and
yeah.
walked to Santiago. And a cousin of mine, Liam, and myself, we said we'd go over in about 2 months later. And the day we met them, they were exactly 2 months walking.
Wow.
And we met them outside of Pamplona. And that, to me, I'm addicted to it, Joe. I'll be honest with you. It's the most satisfying physical, spiritual, call it what you like.
Okay,
and you're
going back out in September. Okay, Billy, let me go to Catherine Hayes. Catherine, again, thanks,
Joe.
Billy. You're doing it in honour of or in remembrance of?
Well, I hope to do it in this year in honour of my son who passed away from SADS in 2017. You had a gentleman on there earlier speaking about it as well. Kevin was just 26 years of age, and he just died in his sleep. So it's called sudden arrhythmic death syndrome now. It's sad. And he literally just passed away in his sleep overnight. He was in absolutely perfect health and fit, and he was just finishing up, actually he was in the write-up stages of his PhD in biochemistry in UL. And I had done 4 parts of it previously, so in memory of a niece of mine.
Okay.
So I'm hoping to take it up again now this year or next year in memory of Kevin. So, yeah, I'm just speaking about SADS as well, you know. The Camino, obviously, you get great, sense of achievement out of doing it, but you get a great sense of peace from doing it as well. meeting people along the way, listening to their stories, hearing why they're doing it,
okay.
that sort of thing. And it's just so friendly the way everybody says Bon Camino along the way, you know, and strangers passing them, and you can walk on your own, you can walk in a group, you can talk to people mm-hmm. along the way.
And people,
beautiful scenery.
Yeah, but Catherine, people do open up, do they? The conversation is easy.
Oh, they do. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, everybody has a story. Okay. So everybody has a story.
Would this question exist? Like, why do you begin with? Why are you doing the Camino yourself?
A lot of the time people would say that, you know, and it's sometimes for religious reasons, you know, because it is a pilgrimage, you know, and St. Francis, but you know, it's just lots of people just get a great sense of peace, and I got a great sense of peace, you know, with my sister doing it a few times. We did it 4 times we started. Mm-hmm. We flew into Biarritz and we went on to St. Jean Pied de Port, and that's the beginning of the French Way. Okay. And as your previous listener said, they're... my sister christened it the Small Pyrenees, mm-hmm. But they're not Small Pyrenees, believe me. But it's a great sense of achievement, and you feel close to that person, if you understand what I'm saying, along the way.
Yeah.
And as I say, you know, getting back to the SADS, sudden arrhythmic death syndrome, yeah. I mean, 2 people a week are passing away from SADS in Ireland. Yeah.
So more research and needed.
Very, very, very okay. large amount of research needed. And we're not attached to CRY as such. Our family, okay. we're attached to the Matter House Heart. It's called Heart House.
Yeah.
And they do screening for our families.
Okay, you are. Which is really sad.
But we actually have a friend, Joe, that's a friend of Kevin's, who's doing... let's talk about doing things in honour of people. He's doing the marathon, the Sable. It's across the desert.
Wow.
Yeah, he's doing it at the end of April in Kevin's memory, and he's fundraising for it.
Well done.
And it's 850 kilometres across the desert in 8 days. So the Camino is a stroll in the park.
Yeah, okay, I'll take a word
for it. You know,
for
compared to that.
Okay, yeah, Catherine, so. Well done, and condolences, and Kevin, may Kevin rest in peace, that passed away at only 26. Thanks, Catherine. Robbie Giles, sorry for holding you, Robbie. You did the Camino.
Joe, good afternoon.
You did the Camino 3 years ago. Why?
Yeah, sorry, Joe, I was wrong on that. It's actually 4 years ago. Sorry.
Okay, no worries.
Why I did it, Joe, I suppose, I was in quite a dark place at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just listening to him.
Well, the stories, as you can hear, we heard from Catherine there, in remembrance of her son, who unfortunately passed away. He's only in his sleep. You were in a difficult place.
Listening to your call out there just brings it all back to me, you know, the memories of it. I was in quite a bad place at the time, and I just decided, you know, like this. I mean, my story is sort of strewn with... Sort of unusual coincidences, but I don't believe they're coincidences in hindsight. I just bumped into a guy that I hadn't met in years. He was a local referee in my area, and we got chatting. And he says to me, something came up, and I'll tell you what it was. He used to run a lot of marathons, and I asked him, is he still running the marathons? And he said, no, he had to get them up because he had problems with joints. But he says, I've taken a walk, and he said, I'm absolutely addicted to the Camino. And he'd been doing, he now does them 4 or 5 times a year. And he's been doing it for years now. And so we got talking about it, and he recommended it to me. And I went off, did a bit of research, and I said, you know, heck this, I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
And here was the real, this is one thing that really got me. As you said at the outset, Joe, you get a passport, right? And you get it stamped along the way. But you can get the passport in this church. I can't remember the name, but it sort of escapes me. It was in James Street in Tower, in Dublin.
I think it's called St. James.
I went into the church. Now, this is hard to believe. And I walked into the church looking for somebody to get the passport off. And there was a priest sitting on his own. So Mass had finished. The church was completely empty. He was the only figure in the church. And he was kneeling down praying to the altar. And I waited for him to finish and I followed him into the sacristy. And who was it? Only the parish priest that used to be in Fingus where I was born and reared. And I was an altar server to him years ago. And my mother sang in the choir. My late mother sang in the choir. And I couldn't believe it. Okay. I recognised him instantly.
And anyway, how did you get on the Camino then? That at any stage when you started, because you were heading off on your own, you were in a difficult space, as you said, Robbie. At any time, especially near the start, did you say to yourself, God, am I mad? What am I doing here?
Well, I suppose what I wanted to do, Joe, is I wanted to force myself to flush those bad feelings out of me. So I was determined to do it on my own.
Well, that's incredible, willpower.
As luck would have it, I met an Australian girl at the bus station. I flew into Santiago and then you get the train back to Sarria, which is a 100-kilometre route. I could only do the week because of work commitment, so I only did the last 100 kilometres. But I met this girl and she was a little bit nervous and she said to me, do you mind if I walk the first few stages with you? And I said, of course. So we woke up the next day together. She was in a different albergue to me, but we're in the same town. We met, had breakfast. And halfway through the fourth stage, we met up with an English woman. And you asked Catherine there earlier on, you know, what was the sort of the conversation opener with everyone that I met was, why are you doing this?
Yeah, great.
So every time you met someone, was, why are you? And it was absolutely fantastic. You know, people were opening to each other. Things that you wouldn't tell your best friends or even your family members, you were telling these strangers. It was
fantastic.
And
it's that part of it, Robbie, that you know you are talking to strangers and more than likely you will never see them again.
Yeah, well, the irony of it is, again, is that we've remained really good friends, myself and these two girls. But you're right. There's just something about talking to strangers because there's no judgment. It's because that you're never going to talk to them again. You know, well, you feel you're never going to talk to them again at the time. You can throw out anything. You can throw out your good, bad, and indifferent feelings or emotions, whatever. But the one thing I will say, I don't think anybody's touched on it yet. So the journey itself is just, I mean, I can't recommend it enough. Through business and through just personal holidays, I've been, you know, to the four corners of the earth. Mm-hmm. There is nothing comparable to the experience of doing the Camino. But when you walk through and arrive in that square in Compostela de Santiago, I'm telling you, every single emotion flushed from me. And I was on my knees. I was crying. I was laughing. We hugged each other. Everybody hugged each other. People that never seen each other before. That you might have met along the way. I cannot recommend this enough. If you're thinking about it, don't think about it. Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
Okay. Well said, Robbie.
Absolutely. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Kay Tobin, you were on the Camino quite recently.
I was indeed. Well, I didn't walk the Camino this time, but in 2016, myself and my husband and another couple of friends, we did a week on the Camino from Sarria. And we always wanted to go to Finisterre. My husband was fascinated because he said in historical times, they said it was the end of the earth.
Okay.
So anyway, at the time, he was undergoing treatment for cancer. In 2014, when he was diagnosed with cancer, he wanted to do all of these things, including Croagh Patrick, which we did, which was worse than doing the Camino.
Oh, that's so a relief to me now, because I did,
So anyway, off we went anyway, and we did all the different stages, got there. So this time then, when I was there in February, I brought my husband Martin. He died in 2020. And I brought some of his ashes back at the end of February. They're just February, just gone, out to Finisterre, that's where he wanted to go. So out into the sea, I just scattered some of his ashes, not all of his ashes, into the sea there. And I felt, well, at least then I had done something that he wanted to do, because he really, really wanted to do it. He thought he would have got back to do it, but unfortunately he didn't. So we were so happy with doing that, and a couple of my friends came with me, but we got the bus we flew into Santiago, and we stayed 3 nights and got the bus out to a place called Finisterre. And I got him there eventually anyway. That's what I thought. Oh, well, I'll get him there sometime. And so, unfortunately, that's the only way he got there. But I'm sure he would have been happy with that. Okay. But the Camino is everything that everybody says.
Is it? Yeah.
people hug one another, people cry. Oh, it's just everything, everything that people say. And we weren't religious type of people at all. Mm. And we're still, it's not a religious place, I know that.
Okay.
But the cathedral is so fantastic. Oh my God, you're just, it's just, it's overpowering. That's what I'd say about it. It's overpowering.
And you mentioned that, that your, what was your husband's first name, Kay?
It was Martin. Martin.
You mentioned Martin that that when he walked Camino, when he was going through chemo.
That's right, yes.
And how did he manage?
He was very good-ish. But he was very fit, you see, when he did get cancer in 2014. And then he had a couple of surgeries, and then he was on chemo, and he was on a break, if you understand, from chemo. He had been on it for 6 months, and we knew then that there was a 3-month break coming. Right. He never was without cancer. Once he got it, he had it. And when the 3-month break came, we arranged it and we booked it all ourselves on the internet. And as I say, both of our best friends came with us, and Phil is my friend, and she had a major brain hemorrhage just in the May in 2014. So she was really keen to do it too. So the four of us set off on the trail, and it was just fantastic.
Okay.
And Martin was grand. You know what I mean? He got through it. You know.
I know you went out with the Asher, but would you do part of, would you walk part of the Camino again without Martin, if you follow me? Well, would that be too, too upsetting?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You would do it, okay.
The amount of people that you meet, and you sit down and have dinner with strangers, you actually nearly go into strangers' houses and have dinner. It is just, and it's so easy to organise. You go online and you can organise it all yourself. You know, and get your bag brought ahead and everything. You don't have to go with any group
or anything like that.
It was just the four of us. It was fantastic. And as I say, in February, I got back there with the ashes.
Okay.
So, with just
a little small piece of the ashes,
the Undertaker had taken it out, Michael Donovan, he had taken out the ashes for me and put them into a little file. And that's what I brought. And myself and my friends, we just dropped the ashes into the sea. That's all we could do. We took it out of the file, obviously, and scattered them, you know. It was very emotional.
Okay.
But the whole walk was emotional, everything about it. I'm delighted now that I've done that.
Okay, it's only you did it recently.
A bit settled and a bit at peace. I'm sure he'd be delighted.
Okay, well said.
Anyway... It's fantastic.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks, Kate. It's Kate Tobin, Gerard Mine. Gerard, you're going on Tuesday.
I am indeed. How are you doing, Gerard?
What stretch are you doing? How long will it take?
I'm doing a very short stretch this time. I've got 18 months ago, I did the walk from a place called Somport in the Pyrenees and it's 873 kilometres.
Okay.
And myself and a Spanish man I met on the first time I did it. He walked with me the second time, and the same guy is walking me this time, the Portuguese one. So he doesn't speak English and I don't speak French, so it's great. Or Spanish, I mean Spanish.
That is okay. So how do you communicate?
Beer, Joe, it's spelled the same in every language.
What is?
And beer.
Okay.
No, joking aside, he speaks a couple of words and we just manage.
Great.
We just manage.
Okay, sounds wonderful. So you're going off on Tuesday. When will you meet him?
On Tuesday.
Okay, great. Well, best of luck.
One of the things that no one has commented on is the safety of the Camino. In the last two Caminos that I've done, most of the people I met were young people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were from South America, a huge amount from South America, and they were all like teenagers up until their mid-20s, mostly girls on their own. And I have to say that that safety aspect is a huge thing. And then my second point
what
is...
What do you mean it is safe?
Yes, it is safe.
Oh, okay. That's
very safe. There appears to be the Spanish people themselves and the Galicians tend to, and of course the Portuguese, they watch out for people and they make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, I get that sense in a load of different ways, Okay, Jared, I've got to take a quick break and then safe travelling anyway. Joe, yes.
I will indeed. Thanks,
okay,
Joe,
safe travelling, Jared.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And remember in marking Van Gogh, the world's greatest painter, 170 this week. We're doing Van Gogh Friday. Not a funny Friday. Van Gogh Friday this Friday. If you can describe, that was a challenge you put. If you can describe a Van Gogh painting in your own words on the radio, and we will have a painter in studio who will be painting, and we'll have music marking Van Gogh's history. By the way, as also pointed out to me today, Peg Sayers would have been 150, the wonderful Peg Sayers. So 170, Van Gogh, 150, Peg Sayers. And today as well, Sil Fox, the great comedian, is 90. So there's three people in the same week, three artistic legends. Happy birthday, Sil. It's an incredible age. He's 90 years of age. John Kane, John, you're 73 and you did a Camino 2 years ago. What was it like?
It was brilliant, Joe. Absolutely brilliant. I'd lost a lot of weight. I'd waited and got really fit. Okay. Along came the pandemic, so I had to skip it for 2 years. By the time I got to go on it, I was 70, into my 70s, and the crowd I went with were 18 people. They were from the USA, Botswana, Seattle, you know, Wales, Dutch, you name it. It was a complete, and all ages, from about youngest about 25 all the way through, mainly one was a doctor from the UK, and she was about 60-odd. And just beautiful people. And exactly what those people have been saying.
But did you know
you meet
each other?
People,
did this
you're
group...
not going to meet them again. Okay. And you trade, I don't mean trade because that sounds wrong, but you actually impart personal details that you probably wouldn't do to anybody else,
good
except
point.
It just makes that sort of ambiance or whatever, you know, just it facilitates it. And it was fabulous. The guide was brilliant. He was Galician. He was into... His name was Peter. He was into the pipes and everything else. So he had it down to a T, and he was just ace. I loved it for that reason, because it was a reward for having lost 4 or 5 stone on a health trial called Strive. And I absolutely loved it. It was a reward with the family's blessing to go and do. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend it to anybody. I'll try and do it again, but I won't do it in 6 days. I'll have to take 10. But I absolutely loved it. And I think the one thing that everybody should take from it, if they decide to do it, is you've got to be open. And everybody respected everybody else's privacy afterwards. You know, we still have a WhatsApp group. Most of them are still there. And it's just fantastic. I couldn't recommend it enough.
Okay.
And funny enough, a way to finish was my friend Pat, who guided me all the way, a lot younger, much fitter. He had to help me out of the bath at one stage. I was so stiff. I mean, there, what can you say? Self-deprecation in spades. Got to Aer Lingus. My foot ballooned up because two nurses from Seattle had fixed it up for the last day. A stewardess who had kids who, you know, grown men as athletes, took one look at it, and I said, have you got a knife anywhere? And they said no, but they went down to the back and they got one of those wooden knives, and they serrated it off, and then they put me in a jump seat with loads of stuff on my, loads of ice and everything on my foot, and that's how I finished the Camino. Picked up by my granddaughter, while Pat was picked up by his daughter. Talk about stages in life. It's absolutely fabulous. I did go and do the spiritual bit at the end, and I was so glad I did, but that wasn't the main reason. It's just some sort of fulfillment. If people can afford it, they should do it.
Well said. Senan Lilla, Senan, you've written a song.
I wrote it in Leon in 2012.
Well, here it is. It's coming up for that. We've about a minute left on the programme. Go ahead, let's listen. Senan Lilla.
Buen Camino, Buen Camino, Buen Camino to Santiago. Santiago, 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 Buen Camino. In far away Spain, across mountains and plains, I sit on the route to Santiago. For hundreds of years, amidst blood, sweat, and tears, with amigos and pilgrims, a walk and we'll go. Buen Camino.
Well done, Sen. And when did you do the Camino?
I've done Camino several times, Joe. 8 or 9 times. I started back in 2010, I think it was.
Okay, Nicola, let me go to Nicola's floor, because you have a remarkable story. You met a chap on the Camino. How many thousand miles had he walked?
He had walked, at the time we spoke to him, he'd walked 97,000 kilometres. And he was on his way from Santiago to Medjugorje in Yugoslavia to visit one of the holy sites there. And
wow.
quite astonishing and a lovely character.
97,000.
Yeah, he had been basically a Portuguese fisherman, and they went out to sail in the North Sea, and unfortunately his boat was thrown over and they all went into the water, and he said a prayer to the Virgin Mary to ask to be saved, and within a number of minutes after that he had been picked up by a helicopter. They took him to Norway, okay, where he spent 6 months in a hyperbaric chamber.
Wow.
And
so
he got out, he did this.
So it was in thanks for being saved. Yeah. Okay, thanks indeed. All our callers back tomorrow, 1:45. Shannon Gorman produced. Ray Darcy next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.